Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, October 15, 2011. And we have a special lineup today, a special program, because our discussion, which is live today, is taking place, as it happens, on the day of literally hundreds and hundreds of street protests around the world involving hundreds of thousands of people. This arose, it's only been a month after the mid-September Occupy Wall Street upsurge in New York City. But what we're going to do is have a special firsthand report from on the scene in Texas and California from two of our LaRouche Democrat candidates of the slate of six. That would be Keisha Rogers, who's going to be in Austin, Texas, and Summer Shields in the San Francisco Bay Area. Let me say first, I'm glad that we have as co-host today with me, Harley Schlanger. Welcome, Harley.
Hi, Marcia. It's good to be back.
And Harley is back by telephone now. He's speaking to us from Europe and Austria, but he's back here. And that brings me to the second to another aspect of the order of discussion today. Keisha Rogers and Summer Shields will join us on the half hour, because in the first half hour, as we have put on our website, we must have a discussion on the actual coup danger, literally a Hitler-style coup threat that's active in the United States, associated with the London financial interests that are on the rope. And we have very glad to have Leandra Bernstein with us from LPAC TV and editorial. Welcome, Leandra.
Thank you, Marcia.
You may have seen her blog that's getting responses posted on LaRouchePAC.com. So what I want to do, because of the timing, Leandra can be with us for the half hour, is Harley and Leandra will initiate the dialogue.
Yeah, let me just say that the first and most important thing is what Lyndon LaRouche put on the table this week, which is, as you said, Marcia, the danger of a Hitler-style coup. And we're not using the term Hitler to try and catch someone's attention. There's an actual coup underway that started with George W. Bush. Actually, it started with George Herbert Walker Bush, but in its most recent effect goes back to September 11th, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, and has actually been continued and strengthened in the danger of a ripping up of the Constitution and a top-down dictatorship under Barack Obama. And what LaRouche is saying is that the most important thing for this population today to realize is that this coup threat is a result of the complete collapse of the global financial system. And I can say more later on this from what I've seen in Europe, because the point that Lynn always makes, that there are many people in Europe who are good people who know what's going on, but they're not going to solve the problem, is I can just confirm absolutely from having been here for the last 2 months, that in fact you see complete and utter chaos in Europe, one meeting after another. But in the United States, there is a reaction. Now, the first thing is, a lot of the people who are reacting are legitimately reacting to the crisis, but they don't understand what we mean by a Hitler-style coup. And Leandra's been working on this in the Purcellville LaRouche PAC editorial team. And I'd like to turn it over to you, Leandra, to give people a sense of what it is we're putting together about this threat, because the cause of it, and I should have just added this, what LaRouche is saying is that there is no solution to this financial crisis within the system. The only thing they can do is go for more intense looting and austerity, and that requires a destruction of any pretense of a democratic form of government. The other alternative, of course, is our alternative with Glass-Steagall and the credit policy. But, Leandra, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely what you said, that you're looking right now, the issue is timing. And the timing is the collapse of what has been built up really since the death of Franklin Roosevelt with the system of globalization, of privatization, the erosion of the sovereign nation state, and moves toward the privatization of government. And if anyone has any misgivings about the dictatorial coup that Obama is trying to pull off, my only question is, how many wars does he have to start? I mean, we joke about it around here that he already ran the invasion of Poland, when which was unsuccessful, when he sent Geithner over there to propose the leveraged bailout of the euro. But in all seriousness, with now sending the targeted assassination of two American citizens in Yemen using unmanned aerial vehicles, drones, the boots on the ground now in Libya, contractors, really private contractors, and then 100 American troops being sent to Uganda with the intention to move these troops again through in different nations in Congo, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Sudan, other nations in Central Africa. And so, I mean, what you're looking at is the first African American president conducting imperial warfare on the African continent. And so what Lyndon LaRouche said, and this was back in 2009 with the healthcare debate and a sudden shift in the Obama presidency early on after one of his first trips to London, that this man is wholly owned by the British monarchy and the intention for imperial warfare in Africa, and the role that he's playing as a puppet of these Wall Street interests, in the same way that Hitler rose to power through Wall Street interests, through the Bank of England, through the House of Windsor, and itself. Obama is acting out this same role at yet another critical juncture in history. And so I think that first of all, in terms of the most recent developments, you're not looking at some kind of slow evolution toward a dictatorial coup. This is being run as we speak, and the American people who are now massed in a certain way, in certain numbers, at least in the Occupy Wall Street movement, need to understand this. But
Andrew, let me just jump in with a point here that I think you made the point, but I think we really have to emphasize this. The condition of warfare is being done precisely as the British Empire intended, which is through these privatized armies. And I think this is important because Lynn made a point in passing the other day, I think on the Weekly Report, where he talked about how when Hitler came to power initially, people thought he was a joke, that he would be a short-term president or a chancellor and he'd be run out. But he had a private army, the SS and the SA, that he had a private army that he deployed quickly. And if you look at the evolution, as you pointed out, from Bush to Obama, we have this so-called revolution in military affairs run out of Middlebury College in Vermont. And the story on this is up on our website. But this is a creation of a private army with backup from National Guard and the military, but a private army that could be deployed at any moment. Now that this president has gained the acceptance of the right of him to assassinate Americans through secret court proceedings, they could use this private army to literally round up people in the United States tonight. And I think that's the point when people are demonstrating. It's not just that the banks are bad. Of course they're bad. Of course we need Glass-Steagall. But you'd better face the deeper question, which is the civilization is collapsing, and the enemies of the United States in London, who run Barack Obama, have set up these private armies to act for a police state at the moment they have to.
Yeah, and Harley, this came up in some discussions that the web team was having with LaRouche's basement team, his scientific research team, that there are, in a sense, there are two moves for dictatorship going on at the same time, and they've evolved over decades. The first is this cold coup that we're talking about with the privatized military, which, I mean, we're going to be presenting more on the website. But the other is the dictatorship over people's minds, and the way that American culture has been subverted again since the Truman administration, and in the most extreme cases in the 1960s. And as these movements develop out of legitimate hatred and in some cases despair for what's happening to the country, I thought it was interesting. One of our organizers asked a group on the ground at a protest, what do you see the world as being after the takedown of Wall Street? And they were silent. And so,
yeah, that's
so. But you look at what's happened to the culture of the United States, the rock, drug, sex counterculture, and the fundamental axioms that people have accepted as their culture, their preferences of music, their preferences of how they spend their time on the social media, the social networking, Facebook, MySpace, all of these things. And this kind of the hedonism of the culture is really no different from the free market Wall Street hedonism. And I mean, what we're going to be doing, especially out of the basement, is returning the American people to their culture, to an optimistic, science oriented culture that has a direction rather than the fleeting, chasing after fleeting pleasures and avoiding pain.
Leandra, a perfect example of this is how we ended up with Obama in the first place, because people were rightfully enraged by what Bush and Cheney did to the country. And you get this guy coming along who promises hope and change, and people got starry-eyed, and you had these television media types like, what's his name, Chris, anyway, one of them
Matthews.
Who said he was getting goosebumps up and down his legs listening to Obama speak. Now, it just shows you the difference between the immediate period after World War II with FDR, the period of President Kennedy with NASA, where there actually was a sense of the future. And it was a sense of the future which tied together the idea of the nation, a constitutional republic, and the question of scientific advance. And that's where the cultural optimism came from. You look at the last 40 years, and you see the destruction of that. You've got a generation which is adrift, this young generation. They can't find jobs. They have no hope, but they don't know a lot. And it's interesting to see that all across the world, one of the things that's sticking with them is the idea of Glass-Steagall, you know, that we can actually use government for the purposes of preventing banks from just being predatory looters. So there's hope and optimism there, but it's going to require an enormous amount of education.
Yeah, it's going to be a certain part education, and then a lot more of inspiration. That these are things that we can accomplish, that we can only accomplish, like the NWAPA project. It's recognized by even some of the crazy Republican ideologues recognize that only the federal government can run a program like NWAPA. Only the federal government can run a program like NASA. That this isn't something that can be left up to the private sector. And I mean, constitutionally, only the government can, the federal government can run things like national defense and conducting wars.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that you take it away from a national mission, the way they're doing with what Rumsfeld did, what the Iraq War represented, what this Libyan atrocity represents, they're turning these things into imperial little wars where there's no idea of a final mission. And the mission not being military, but transforming a population. And, you know, the Republicans say, well, now you're talking about creating democracy. No, we're actually talking about showing people how you can improve your future. And how, as citizens of a republic, that's your job. And I think that's the inspiration that's lacking. All you can do with these private armies is what Hitler did. Round people up and kill them.
Yeah, and I mean, if you go back to the real foundations of American foreign policy, early American foreign policy, like what John Quincy Adams was doing, and what George Washington's farewell address stated explicitly, that we were not going to subject ourselves to European intrigue, that we wouldn't sacrifice our nation to become some kind of appendage of ongoing imperial warfare, which was what took off in Europe around the French Revolution. And the policy of George Washington, the policy of John Quincy Adams, the policy, I mean, this is also interesting because this initiated our initial collaboration with the nation of Russia was on the basis of neutrality, and in this case, armed neutrality.
Right.
But we were looked to as a young republic in a sort of global mass strike ferment, which was taking place around the time of the American Revolution and in many, many countries around the globe in that period. But we were looked, and it was explicit with Russia. There was a very interesting correspondence between, this was a little later, between Alexander I and Thomas Jefferson saying, when we opened trade with Russia, saying, we look at the United States as an adversary to Great Britain. And I believe it's the United States alone that can free the seas from the despotic mistress of the seas, Great Britain. So we were seen as the republic that was the biggest opposition to what Great Britain represented, this global imperialist leviathan. And you know, in that era it was largely controlled the seas, but now, I mean, we're in a new era, and our mission is the same, our enemy is the same, and the way they're operating now is globalization and the control of our executive office.
Yeah, I think that's really important that we continue to develop this idea for people that the struggle in the world is between two conflicting visions. One, an imperial vision, which really is the 1% view. You know, the one thing the Occupy Wall Street has right, one of the things is when they talk about the 99% against the 1%. If you look at the world, it's been the British Empire since 1763. That's been the problem. And they basically view the world as their oyster and everyone else as slaves or non-humans who are there to serve them. Now, if you then look at the difference, the culmination of the European colonization, particularly the Cruza-directed colonization, and then the influence of the German philosopher and scientist Leibniz on Franklin and others, the Massachusetts Bay Colony, what you actually see is this idea of a science-driven republic. And that is inherently a democratic conception. And if you think about it was very interesting. I was down in downtown Innsbruck today. There was Occupy Innsbruck, and we had there are a bunch of people there who were saying things like, we're here for the animals. But there were small groups of really serious people, and what we had a discussion about was a dialogue that ended up talking about real physical wealth versus funny money. And that immediately brought us to this question of the British Empire versus the American system. And this is not just an economic question. It is a question about military policy and about how you treat people in your own nation and other nations. And I think Leandro, I don't remember the exact senators. Maybe you know this, but two senators came out of a hearing the other day on the upgrading of the Patriot Act under Obama. And one of them said, if the American people knew what we were doing in terms of spying, they would be up in arms.
One of them was Wyden.
That's right.
A fellow Democrat. Mm-hmm.
And Udall from Colorado.
Correct.
Yeah. And
Utah, I think, yeah.
Yeah, the point they were making, which is a really important point, is what we're talking about, which is that Americans have a sense of justice, but they're very ignorant of what they're losing right now.
Yeah, and I think that that's the role of history, and living history plays a very, very important role right now, because a lot of people, especially young people, don't understand what came before them, so what their life is actually an extension of. And Sky Shields just wrote up an excellent statement, which is on the website right now, on the organized page, as this is heavy ammunition for the mass strike, for these Occupy Everywhere events, and includes a sort of a revolutionary curriculum on the back with different videos that we've produced out of LaRouche Pack. But giving people the sense, yes, of their lives, every individual's life is part of a directionality in history. And the role of a nation state as a type of organism controls that, has the potential to control where we head in the future, what our lives mean to the future. And this is something that you brought up John F. Kennedy. This is something that he absolutely understood. And one of the reasons why I believe, had he lived, he absolutely would have implemented the NWAPA project in addition to what he did with the space program, that the way he looked at the Tennessee Valley Authority was looking at a contribution made by a previous generation, a great generation, who he obviously revered, including you can see it with his relationship with Eleanor Roosevelt. And the way he was looking at these projects was that generation giving the following generation, his generation and people younger than him, the gift of power, of water, of civilization through what they did with the TVA. And that was his conception of government, that the government acts today for the future of the nation, for the better future of the nation. And the problem we've had is short-sightedness among our own people for reasons including the plague of the rock, drug, sex counterculture is a short-sightedness, immediate gains, immediate pleasures. And so we've forgotten in the course of time to even look at the people who we've been putting into office, who we've been putting at the helm of the ship. I mean, the son and the grandson of the man who put Adolf Hitler into power, the Bush family legacy. I mean, my God, that's not even a few times removed. And then what we did with Barack Obama, who is
Andrew, let me ask you, what are we going to be putting up then? Because I know we have the videos that we're putting out on this leaflet that are part of a curriculum. But in terms of giving people this sense of history, what are we planning on the for the website in the near term?
Right now what we're trying to do is pull together a package that's really going to serve as the to borrow from Friedrich Schiller, the aesthetical education of the current mass strike.
Right.
And
so to borrow another phrase from Schiller, a great moment doesn't find a little people.
Yes. Or many little people.
Yeah.
But one of the things that was so effective that Lyndon LaRouche did in recruiting young people around the 2000, it was largely 2000 through 2006, there was a mass recruitment of a youth movement, and the cultural interventions with the music program, the study of Bach, and then the vicious attack against the current culture, the counterculture, which some people might remember, the Children of Satan 3 pamphlet, which, and then also a little bit later, what our generation did in pulling together the pamphlet, The Devil in Your Laptop, making these cultural interventions is going to be absolutely key, because we have the program for the future of the United States. We know the direction that we have to move in, but it's giving people the fortitude, the bearing, separating, getting a real Gideon's army. That's going to mean our success.
When you talk about this cultural fight, I was there in that period from 2000 to 2006, and one of the things that I found most effective, which I did a series of classes around who owns your culture, was to show that the same people who profit from drugs and rock music and rap music were the same people running the revolution in military affairs, the same people who were benefiting from the setting up of the derivatives market after Glass-Steagall was repealed. And to show that you're really talking about a very small group of people who are the enemies of this nation. They really are an oligarchy. It really is a 1% or less. But that what many Americans have adopted as their culture was really given to them to make them pliable victims of this imperial operation. I think if we do some things with that, it would be really effective.
Yeah, I certainly remember your interventions, and
but I think the point that you made that's really important earlier is that how do you get people to ignore the fact that you have a president who has gone far beyond what Bush ever thought he could do in terms of ordering assassinations, in terms of being able to go into your financial records, the reports that just came out this week, that the Patriot Act gives them the right to go into your financial records, your email accounts, and not have to account for that. Why do people tolerate that? And I think we're seeing a change occurring, and this is the moment where the change can take place. In fact, it has to. But just in the last couple of minutes, Leandra, your sense of watching this thing, how it's moving, give people a sense of how we're going to help them get back their optimism.
Well, there's a very good chance that we can win, because our enemies right now, their system is so untenable. And I mean, you're over in Europe, where things are just, you have this image of a building just falling apart, just windows knocked out, collapsing in on itself.
And then they say, oh, we have a plan tomorrow that'll work.
Yeah, we have a plan tomorrow that will work. we'll put a little bit more money in the system to get us through to the end of the week. There is nothing sustainable about the system of our enemy. But our system, if people can commit themselves to doing something in their interest, and it sounds like something very easy to do, but to commit themselves to seeing through the success, a successful revolution based on the difference between a human individual and any other species, any species of animal, that we can determine what our future is going to be. Nothing else that we know of on this planet, in this universe that we know of, has that ability. And that's unique to us, and it's something that we need to harness with everything we have if we're gonna win this. And it is winnable. There are no guarantees, but you fight because it is winnable.
Well, Leandra, I know you've got to jump off, and we've got Keisha and Summer coming on, but I want to give you just a funny story that amplifies that point. There was a group in Innsbruck, in this Occupy Innsbruck crowd, that was advocating doing away with money as a solution to the banking crisis. And this one woman was saying, it's like wild animals. They live together fine in packs, and they take care of each other, and they don't have money. Now, the obvious point is that she doesn't know a damn thing about animals because they don't take care of each other. But so this one guy who was standing there listening to this discussion just said, yes, but did dogs land a man on the moon?
Well, that's an optimistic break point, because you started right. with the coup danger, and we do have Keisha and Summer on, but I endorse Leandra's optimism. I want to be human.
All right, well, thanks for joining us, Leandra. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
And we can, I think they may chime in, Harley, but from Austin,
well,
Texas.
Well, let me bring them on and say hello to Summer and Keisha. You both there?
Say that again.
Okay, Summer and Keisha, you there?
Hey, Harley.
There's Summer Shields, yes.
All right, Summer Shields out in sunny San Francisco. So, Summer, what's going on with Occupy San Francisco?
Well, there's an interesting situation out here where we've got probably, I actually haven't been out there today, but last night there's probably about 200 or so people were gathered around. And what you see, what I was struck by was the fact that you would have, for instance, we had an organizer who passed out leaflets and invited a group of people to come listen to a class on Glass-Steagall and the deeper principles behind it. And sure enough, about 20 people showed up out of this group to come discuss and actually listen to and get orders on what Glass-Steagall is and what it means and why it's important. But the discussion spanned everything from Glass-Steagall as a law to stop Wall Street to why we have to stop the British Empire to stop global genocide and the collapse of human civilization. And what struck me was the high level of discussion that came out of that, which covered everything from, which we brought to the table, the LaRouche Political Action Committee brought to the table, which covered everything from quantum physics to the Platonic solids and boundaries in the universe. And people were ready to have that kind of discussion, which wasn't there out devoid of us. And the interesting thing is that you have some extremely intelligent people who are ready for the leadership that we're providing.
I think it needs to be said, Summer, that from the reports that I've seen from around the country, many of these groups have adopted Glass-Steagall as their leading, I guess they don't call it demand because they don't want to be demanding, but as their leading issue. And, of course, in the last week, there's been an escalation of the fight for Glass-Steagall in Europe, with the former Prime Minister of France, Michel Rocard, endorsing Glass-Steagall in a full-page article in Le Monde, the leading newspaper in France. The debate continues in the Swiss Parliament over Glass-Steagall. largely because the UBS, the bank, which, by the way, people should know this, UBS is the bank that Phil Gramm now works for. Phil Gramm, the guy who repealed Glass-Steagall and when he was in the Senate, went to work for UBS, and UBS is now one of the leading criminal institutions in the world, as is proven by the so-called loan trader who lost $2 billion. But the Swiss parliament is debating it. It's being debated in Denmark, in the Swedish parliament. It's gotten to the point in Europe where the British had to come up with a completely phony, typically Delphic British operation called ring fencing to try to take the wind out of the sails. But in the United States, as you say, people are interested in this. Is Keisha on now?
Yes, she is.
Keisha, you've been getting the same kind of response on Glass-Steagall in Houston and Austin, I understand.
Yeah, hi, hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. I'm out here in Austin now, and we're at City Hall. There's about maybe close to 2,000 people that have marched from City Hall to the capital of Austin, and what you're finding is people are ready for a real solution. We're getting a lot of response to Glass-Steagall. We have a table that's set up here, and as soon as we set up the table, it was swarming with people that are saying, you know, you guys have the guts to tell the truth. There is going to be no solutions as long as Obama remains in office. We have the Obama stash, the Hitler stash, very clearly displayed, and also the solutions people are finding, we are the ones that are providing it to them. And so it's been a very polarized response from the participants here. We've had the table swarming with people who want to know what more can we do to get Glass-Steagall through. There's widespread recognition of the fight for Glass-Steagall. But the most important thing, I think, is what Summers brought up, is that we're the ones that's giving people a sense of their human creative identity, of their role in this historic fight in actually shaping history, that this is the fight for Glass-Steagall, and what we're representing is not just a banking policy fight, but it actually represents everything that our nation in the fight against British imperialism, against the British Empire, going back to the American Revolution, to the fight of Lincoln in the Civil War, to the fight of Franklin Roosevelt when he came into office to defeat the threat of Nazism and the banking rule. This is what the return to Glass-Steagall represents, a shutdown of the British imperial power over the sovereignty of nation states, and actually reviving what is defined as a truly human economy. And,
well, Keisha, I don't know, I guess you probably didn't hear the first part of the program, but that's exactly what Leandra was discussing. And
yeah.
How do you get back the optimism? Because, look, a lot of what we see with Occupy Wall Street is a legitimate anger. People are saying, why are the banks getting bailed out and we're getting nothing? And, of course, this was what you and Summer ran your campaigns on in 2010. But the second point that both of you had was not just we're going to shut down the banks and stop speculation. That's obvious. That has to happen. But both of you presented a different idea, which I think now is beginning to crystallize for people. With Summer, it was the idea of the Four Powers Conference at the time, the idea of the Trans-Pacific. With you, it was NASA, NOAAPA, and that once you get Glass-Steagall, you create the circumstances where you can have a credit policy. And I'd like both of you to discuss how you're doing that with your campaigns, because both of you have announced your campaigns for Congress, and I want to congratulate you for doing that and give you an opportunity to organize people listening to this program to understand what the slate represents in terms of this idea of a future. So why don't we start with you, Keisha? You were the victor in 2010 in the Democratic primary in the 22nd District, running on a program of impeach Obama and save NASA. How are you expanding on that this time?
Well, the key thing in which I'm continuing to represent is the leadership absolutely essential for our generation today. The leadership that's actually going to get out there and challenge young people to be a part of a mission to tell the truth. And you can, what you're getting right now is a real response to that type of leadership. One, the fact that the media is going around and saying that Occupy Wall Street, Austin, these occupation movements don't have any demands, they don't actually know what they want. That's not true. What they want is they want a future. They actually want solutions. The solutions they want to see is what type of future are we going to have the next 2 to 3 generations down the line? And they're not getting that from, obviously not from Wall Street. They're most definitely not getting it from Obama. They're not getting it from the Democrats and Republicans in Congress that are capitulating. But what they are seeing is they're seeing my campaign here. They're seeing a slate of 6 LaRouche Democrats that are actually providing real solutions. And so when people come up to our table, what we are actually giving them is a sense of what they have to understand as their uniquely human creative identity. And this is defined through a mission for a science driver for the country, for a real space program, returning our nation to the commitment to human space flight once again. And that's just totally exciting these young people, because they know that they just can't be out here, we just can't be out here against Wall Street, against corporate rule. But the question is, what is the solution we're fighting for? And we're giving them a very clear-cut solution. You get Obama out now, you stop this threat of a coup in the country and a threat for dictatorship, because London, Wall Street, and the British know their system is bankrupt, and you go with a mission for the country. And so, you know, it's interesting because there's a total dichotomy with the young people who are ready to lead the nation. Their response to the solutions being proposed for a trans-Pacific orientation, for a driver in human spaceflight, for high-skilled jobs, for NWAPA, re-implementing the North American Water and Power Alliance, they find this is the most exciting thing imaginable. Now, you look at, you have on the other side, a baby boomer generation that's still committed to allowing for the corporate corruption that they have, you know, ushered in the first place. And so the only way that we're going to get the type of results and, you know, this fight for a real economy once again, and to win the fight for Glass-Steagall and throwing the Wall Street puppet out of the White House, is for more young people to do like I did, to do like, and I still continue to do, and also as Summer is doing and the rest of our congressional slate, and go out and tell the truth and educate the population. And one thing I just want to bring up also is, in that, I think the most beautiful aspect of what we're doing to define and to move this mass strike and to actually give it a real powerful mission is we're providing the solutions, but we're providing the solutions from the standpoint of a fight for real creative ideas. And, you know, one of the things that has, I've found that has shaped every single movement throughout history that has revolution and the political struggle has been the fight of human creative beauty. The ideas defined by beauty in classical music, in classical composition, or in the Negro spirituals. And so one thing that what has been so profound is seeing these young people as we're out here and we have our choruses, and this is what we're doing all over the country with the slate, and this is providing the leadership. We have our choruses out, and Houston and here in Austin, and the response we're getting is real representation of what the mass strike truly represents, and them leaning to us for real leadership. And so we've been out, we've been singing spirituals like This Little Light of Mine, Ain't Gonna Let Nobody Turn Us Around, singing American patriotic songs, and you have swarms of people who are coming up to the table and starting to just sing with us. And this is giving a sense, I mean, this is really giving a sense of the empowerment of what this movement can represent as a commitment of our nation to those principles in which this republic, in which our nation was actually founded on. And people know that that's what my campaign and that's what our slate truly defines and represents and brings to the people as the solution.
Let me get to Summer on this, because Summer, one of the things that happened in the last weeks was the shift, the seeming shift in Russia with the reemergence of Putin, who actually never really disappeared, but a Putin-Medvedev team committed to rejecting Wall Street and going with real physical economy. Putin was just in China this last week. They signed a whole series of deals, but more importantly, they made a commitment that they're open for business in physical production and developing resources, science, and technology. And you have a conference coming up this next weekend, which takes up that theme with your campaign in San Francisco as the campaign, as opposed to Nancy Pelosi, who is looking at the polls. You're looking at the next two or three generations in the Arctic. Give us a sense of what the organizing looks like for that event that you have and what you're doing.
Well, as you probably know, Harley, I announced, and everybody who's listening, I did announce my campaign for the U.S. Congress in Chinatown at a restaurant where we've been having a lot of people who have responded very well to the ideas that Mr. LaRouche is talking about and that my campaign and the Six Late are discussing, which is the Pacific orientation and the kind of fight against the British Empire that entails. And you don't really have to describe that and explain all the details to someone who has in China or from China, who has relationships, some sort of relationship to China, who has seen the breathtaking development that's been taking place there. They have a very recent history of against the British, Sun Yat-sen's fight against British imperialism and against imperialism as a principle. And you have a very real sense of optimism coming from the population there. So the ideas that we put out to the so-called Chinese community here is reverberating greatly. And so we've had different officials the people who are kind of the San Francisco political structure who work from the Chinese community here to help people out who they support running for office. You know that you also don't have to tell a Chinese person from San Francisco why Nancy Pelosi is bad, because anybody who bashes China the way that Pelosi does definitely isn't going to be seen in a favorable light. And so that's weighing in our favor. The real excellent thing has been the tremendous outpouring of support coming from the U.S. population and the average citizen for my having announced the campaign in the Chinese community here in San Francisco, and people who in the U.S. who the idea of a trans-Pacific cooperation is resonating with, and they're very excited by this. And just the whole mass strike process that we're seeing, as Rosa Luxemburg talked about, you had the Tea Party, which came and went. You've got Occupy Wall Street, which is another manifestation of this. No one of these things is a thing in and of itself, but it's part of this principle that is underneath everything that is emerging as people are unsatisfied with what's happening. And you're seeing it emerge with people who want real ideas, that they support the concept of a trans-Pacific orientation, and they've been coming out and showing support for this. So we've been building up, inviting people out to this. We're going to have several engineers, including an engineer, Dr. Chang, who worked on the Three Gorges Dam. We're going to have Hal Cooper is going to come out and do a presentation. He designed the Bering Strait project. He'll be doing a presentation on the Bering Strait Engineering Tunnel project.
Summer, why don't you give people the information on when and where it's going to be in case anybody from the San Francisco area is listening.
Yes, great. The conference is going to be October 29th, and it's going to be at the Imperial Palace at 818 Washington Street, and it's going to be from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., and the title of the conference is Rescuing Civilization from the Brink, the Great Trans-Pacific Alliance. And you can get more information on the LaRouche PAC website on the right-hand side.
Now, I think the one thing that's interesting is I'm sitting over here in a different part of the world, not exactly in the Trans-Pacific, but this week there was a conference in Ukraine that featured Russian Railways Chairman Yakunin, who's very close to Putin and also has made very favorable comments about LaRouche in the past. And Yakunin announced that there will be an extension of the Trans-Siberian rail system that will go through Ukraine, Slovakia, and to Vienna. And when I heard this, it reminded me of the old industrial triangle proposal of Lyndon and Helga LaRouche, of the connection after the fall of communism of the industrial centers of Europe with Asia through this idea of spiral rail connections, high-speed rail, and so on. So when I saw this comment by Yakunin and this agreement that was signed, I immediately thought I may soon be able to hop a train in Vienna. If it were in place now, I could come to your conference, but I don't think it will be in place yet. But this is exactly what we're talking about in terms of the transformation of the world in the future. And Keisha, you know, in the few minutes we have left, I'd like each of you just to say something again about if people are angry at Wall Street, what they should do with their anger, how they should be organizing now. So Keisha, why don't you start?
Well, I think the key is educating the population, because we have to educate the population around what it means to be human. Secondly, around what solutions they have to fight for. I mean, we're in a moment right now where all of civilization hinges and hangs on the line here, because we're in a threat for dictatorship in the United States by Obama's British backers. You have no direction in the current leadership of the baby boomer generation. And as we've been telling these young people here, they're the survival of the nation, and you know their generation and the next generation is really going to depend on the 18 to 25 to 35-year-olds and so forth taking up a fight for real ideas, for a mission to restore a truly human creative identity in the population once again. And so that really, and ultimately what it means is that we have to actually fight for a total cultural overhaul of the degenerate culture that we've seen coming out of the baby boomer generation, and that has gone back to really since the assassination, the death of President FDR and the assassination of Bobby and John F. Kennedy, and where you saw cultural degeneration, you know, with the baby boomers in the 68, and so forth. And now you have the two worst presidents and a generation without a future. So what people have to fight for is how are they going to reinstill in the nation the ideas which are going to represent a commitment to a real science driver, putting millions of young people to work in productive jobs, taking Franklin Roosevelt's ideas of a civilian conservation corps, FDR's policy and Kennedy's policy for a mission for manned spaceflight, and actually having a mission for the future of the nation for the next 25 to 50 plus years down the line. I mean, people have to think long term. It can't just be, you know, what are we going to do about the corporate corruption and so forth now. It's what are we going to commit our nation to for several generations to come, and what are we going to commit mankind to? And I think what Summer just laid out, what you just laid out from the perspective of the Trans-Pacific Alliance, the beauty of what Russia and China are doing right now in their collaboration really signify this great potential that we have to go with. So that's what I would encourage people with.
Summer, let me come back to you. In the first part of the program, Leandra and I talked about Lyndon LaRouche's warning of a Hitler-style coup being imposed on the United States by Obama on behalf of the same people who imposed Hitler on Germany in the 1930s, namely British financial interests, including the Bush family and the Harriman family. I assume we're discussing this with people, not just in the organizing, not just telling them about Glass-Steagall, but that this is a fight to save the nation from this coup. Are we getting any sense back from people that they're aware of the abuses that have taken place since the 9/11 with the Patriot Act and so on? And are people responding to the call to act against this coup?
Yes, I think that what's very clear is ever since Dick Cheney praised Obama, that's been very unsettling for most people who thought that they may have supported Obama, the few that were left. And I did have a chance to look at Leandra's article. The urgency is there. What Keisha's bringing up is very important, because there is the sense now that people can move and fight for some higher principle. And this question of a dictatorship being run by Obama through Dick Cheney is something that is not far removed from people's minds, especially given the fact that he just assassinated two American citizens and has been going buck wild with these drone attacks. What he represents is bad news, and a lot of people have been responding to that in particular. And I think that we have to act within the same kind of urgent time frame that we're discussing here, and Mr. LaRouche has been emphatic about, that we are, it is in game for the British Empire. They're playing for keeps. They're nervous and frantic, and they're pushing for a dictatorship inside the U.S. And it's time to really take the higher concepts that people are going to require, drive home a real solution. And part of what I've seen in the recent period, we had this 18-year-old girl who's been coming around, and she told me yesterday that she was 8 years old when September 11th happened. And 10 years before that, you had Dick Cheney pushing for a coup inside the United States. So what is very clear, something that Mr. LaRouche has brought up and we've all discussed here, is that we're losing the generation that fought fascism and knows the British Empire, and we have to move quickly to both educate ourselves and push to make sure that we can take on the fight well into the future and off this planet into space, which I don't think, as was discussed recently, we don't need an oligarchy when we start human space travel. So that's the plus side.
Well, Summer and Keisha, thanks for joining us today. Marcia, I have a concluding comment, and then I'll turn it over to you. I just saw in the last few hours a report on the ongoing discussions in Europe about the so-called solution that led to the drive upward in the stock market the last week or two. Supposedly, the Sarkozy-Merkel agreement was signed, and everyone was excited about it. The bailout was going to continue, and they ran into, once again, another problem, which is that there's just too much debt, too much bankruptcy. Sarkozy's trying to get someone to bail out the French banks without the French government having to do it, because he's afraid France will lose its AAA ratings. And so it looks as though, once again, the global universal solution that was promised has failed. And that is why LaRouche said they're going for dictatorship, because they don't have a solution. And I think this is a point that we've been emphasizing on the LaRouche PAC website, on the Busso website in Germany, on the LaRouche show and the EIR, and we've got to get more people out there talking about the fact that it's not just a question of Glass-Steagall is better than banks looting the population. It's that either we're going to have a Hitler-style dictatorship in the United States, or we'll get back to the republic. And I think that's the level on which this thing has to be fought. So, Marcia, I'll send it back to you for your last thoughts.
Right. I can say something about that, but I do thank Keisha Rogers and Summer Shields. And I know they have to get back to organizing in their different situations. And in response to your short update from Europe, Harley, I think that to be specific about it, because it would be funny except that it's so dangerous, you can't go ha-ha, that the meeting of the G20 financial ministers today in Europe actually concluded again saying, our conclusion is we're having another meeting where everything will be solved. It'll be a week from tomorrow. It'll be October 23rd. That'll be the big bazooka meeting because Germany and France will have a solution by then. Have we heard that before, Harley?
We have heard it before, and everyone gets excited for 2 days, and then everything starts crashing because they realize that someone's paying for this with funny money, but the funny money is backed by the hides of human beings who are being killed to allow the looting to continue.
And that's where I think the issue now is that with what has just been described in the last hour, what everyone's listening in their particular circumstances, as we said, there were people in the streets today from Auckland in New Zealand, all the way around the globe, and what we have is a breakout potential, however, for conceptualization for what has to be done and enforcing that. So with that, we've concluded our time today on the LaRouche Show for October 15. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you, Harley Schlanger, and we'll sign off until next time.